guys are kind of pumped.
Yeah. You're listening to Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. Again, that's not our usual call-in number because we are touring the Western United States on our two oil change tour. And right now we are in Orange, California, which is outside of Los Angeles. I guess would you call that a Los Angeles area?
We're South Los Angeles.
South Los Angeles. Okay. And interestingly enough, on this leg of the tour from Sacramento to Orange, California, we only saw three religious signs. One religiously themed abortion sign, one Jesus saved sign, and one just really ugly cross. And we've been making a count of it. The Tacoma to Sacramento, or Tacoma to Eugene, I saw five. And from Eugene to Sacramento, I saw four. So we're counting down the farther south we get, which honestly, I didn't expect. I rather expected it to go the other way.
Yeah, I did too. Lots of political signs in California, but not so many religious signs. And to be fair, that was a religiously themed anti-abortion.
Yes, it was
roadside sign. Yes.
So, with me today, as usual, is Becky. How are you, Becky?
I'm doing great.
And also joining us from the local area is Kent Martin, and he's from the Backyard Skeptics Meetup and is the co-founder of Friends of Freethought. He is a computer engineer, musician, and skeptical philosopher, and also a community activist. How are you doing today, Kent?
Fantastic. Thanks so much for having me.
No problem. Backyard Skeptics Meetup, I believe that's the auspices under which we are appearing tonight?
Yes. Was a meetup hosted and originated by Bruce Gleason, of course, who's a well-known advocate in this area for free thought, and it's been around for I think better part of a decade, quite a while, and it's got a very active membership. I think over 800 people on the rolls, and it's very well known in the community.
Very cool. So what kind of activities do you guys do down here?
We do a lot of meetups where we bring in a speaker. So it started as Backyard Skeptics because it happens in Bruce Gleason's backyard.
Oh, okay.
More often than not. There's a monthly meetup where oftentimes we bring in someone from the fields of science, research, people, philosophers, different folks from different universities and stuff come in and speak about a topic. We also do activities where we get together. We have a book club, so we get together and every month we pick a book and get together to discuss the book. Oftentimes it's a Lawrence Krauss, it's a Sean Carroll, it's something along those lines, something that's scientific. We also do meetups where we go down to the Huntington Beach Pier, and whenever we show up, our good friend Ray Comfort is always there with the bananas. And
is he local to here?
He is. He's from L.A. area.
How do you live with
that?
Wow.
You know, it's entertaining. He's always a gadfly. He's always fun to get into a debate. So frequently we'll go down there and just sort of, it's kind of like a corner thing where you stand up on a box and advocate for your position and talk to people about fence sitters, especially about their questions about what it's like to leave religion and things like that. And Ray Comfort always shows up to present the opposing view. And we've had several good debates and discussions with him that have made the rounds of YouTube and gone viral. So, yeah.
I kind of wonder, maybe you're in a better position to answer this question for me. Ray Comfort, it seems like his career is trolling atheists. And if we didn't exist, he'd have nothing to do.
He'd be so sad.
Yeah.
He'd be in a ball somewhere.
Okay.
Yeah, I think pretty much that's it. He exists because we exist.
Okay. I've only seen one thing he did that wasn't specifically atheism involved, and it was a video called True and False Conversion, which was about Christians who convert but don't actually convert, and it was basically a no true Scotsman argument for about 2 hours, which is about 1 hour and 50 mm-hmm. minutes longer than you need for a no true Scotsman argument. Mm-hmm. But literally, it's like, this person converted to Christianity, then he beat his wife, not a true Christian. You know, and it was just, that's it. So it seems like, outside of the logical fallacies and editing, editing Darwin incorrectly.
Just I have a fantastic poster that has all of the logical fallacies listed. Mm-hmm. I've never seen a person be able to crank out so many in such a short amount of time than Ray Comfort. I mean, he's really, it's the hat trick of logical fallacies.
That could definitely be a fun game to do in 5 minutes of YouTube Ray Comfort. How many logical fallacies can
I suggest?
Spot?
A drinking game.
Or a banana game.
Exactly.
The problem with drinking games.
Banana daiquiri drinking game.
I think the problem with drinking games like that is you pretty much have to call an ambulance before you start drinking and say, can you be here in about 25 minutes? Because we're all going to be dying of alcohol poisoning.
Precisely.
Oh, man.
Back to Backyard Skeptics for a minute, Ken. You know, I was looking at the meetups, and it seems to be this sort of web of coordinated meetup groups. So how does that work? Is it geographic? Is it by interest? Is it, you know, how did that happen?
Well, it kind of started with, as I mentioned, Bruce Gleason. He's definitely very assertive personality, and he's a very good organizer. And so there have been groups that have started off in different areas of the Southern California region. Like, there was a Long Beach group, there was like a Pomona area group, and frequently they'll have somebody start it, and then they'll get some momentum behind it, and that person drops out. And of course, you know, Meetup requires a yearly subscription fee to keep your meetup in continuance.
Yeah.
And so what Bruce has kind of been doing, or what the skeptics Backyard Skeptics group has been doing, is when that happens and one of those goes defunct, he sort of absorbs them. So it's kind of like this network, and it's also part of the Orange County Freethought Alliance, because Orange County, I mean, surprisingly, you'd think Orange County, you know, the bedrock of the John Birch Society, you know, a church on every corner, you know, conservative. I mean, it hasn't voted for a Democrat, I'm sure, since Roosevelt, you know, right. What I mean, for 60 years, staunchly Republican. There's actually a very, very burgeoning freethought and skeptical movement in Orange County, and I can think of a dozen groups, independent groups, that are all having regular, you know, coordinated meetups, that are having regular events and activities. And so it's quite a burgeoning movement. So the Freethought Alliance sort of coordinates the activities of all those different groups. It comes together for a yearly conference. We just had ours in May. We had some great speakers, P.Z. Myers, Jamie Ian Swiss. I mean, so we had some really big names come through. So that's kind of the web that he's organized it under. And it's also, because it's a 501c3, so you can have that coordinated donation structure, and people can contribute to it. So it's sort of this giant, it's not really, it's loosely organized. I mean, it's not, there's no board of directors, anything like that, but it's definitely a growing movement in this area.
I think loose organization is sort of the hallmark of an atheist organization.
Yeah.
So one of the myths we seem to be debunking on this trip is, you know, sort of groovy liberal California, mm-hmm. that's okay with everything, because we were just up in Sacramento, mm. where we heard a very similar story. They mm-hmm. never vote for Democrats up there, very red state, mm-hmm. everybody's Christian. And so, yeah, we just went from one place like that to another. But it is changing, you're saying.
Well, the demographics are definitely changing, especially in Orange County. Obviously, we have a very large immigrant population, and it is shifting to be a more liberal place. I mean, every recent election, if you look at the numbers, there are more votes going to the left candidate. So yeah, I think that you know, where it's also breaking is with young people. I mean, obviously, we're seeing a massive shift in the demographics, where young people are leaving religion in droves, and really the 20 to 30 crowd, the under 20 crowd. And I think that's largely because of the internet, you know, the wide availability of thoughtful, critical thinking about theism and skepticism that has come from, obviously, the big writers that we're all familiar with, Dawkins, Hitchens, Harris, etc.
Yeah.
But I think that there's just a burgeoning movement among young people to leave that. And, you know, a lot of people weren't raised with religion specifically, so feel more comfortable entertaining other ideas and philosophies and are becoming more comfortable with it. And I think that you know, we're loosely organized, but it is still a coordinated effort, and there's definitely a lot of movement behind it, momentum behind it.
So you poke your fun at Ray Comfort, and that's obvious to see there. But has there been any pushback from religious organizations or religious communities within this area, sort of criticizing atheists or freethinkers or skeptics or the non-religious?
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things that the skeptics have done is billboards. So we put up some very prominent billboards in strategic areas of Orange County where there's a lot of traffic. There was one right at the end of the 55 freeway, which is right next to the Tribune Broadcasting Network, you know, the large Christian, but I think that's within about a couple of miles of that site where the billboard was. And I know that, you know, there's a lot of footage in the local news of people showing up and being irate and saying, how dare you question, you know, because there was a Jefferson quote that questioned, you know, the authenticity of Christ. There was a quote about, I remember one of the billboards was about the flood. How could you have that much rain in one day? You know, that things like that. So just introducing some doubt, not specifically criticizing the figure of Christ or, you know, God or whatever, but saying, you know, hey, let's look at this skeptically. Is this even possible? You know, let's think about this. And so there definitely has been some pushback. I don't think we've ever had like anybody picket an event, like, you know, it's not like the Westboro Baptist Church shows up every time we get together.
Right.
But there's definitely in the community some antagonism, which is to be, you know, expected. I mean, there is an animus against forceful advocacy for something that's somewhat disagreeable or anathema to some people, especially in Orange County.
Was there and now you come to the reason why I'm counting those religious signs as I drive throughout America is, you know, we put up one sign, and apparently the world has ended, and Armageddon has begun.
Right.
Where they've got hundreds, mm-hmm. which, the same thing with atheist media. You know, we have one show in commercial radio. Mm-hmm. They have satellites.
Absolutely.
Was there a direct response to the billboard out here?
I remember reading in a couple of op-eds in our local Register. The Orange County Register is our local paper, and yeah. I remember there was some noises, like I said, on the evening news, and some, you know, they would do the man on the street interview, and they'd have you know one atheist and five Christians or whatever, or 10 Christians, and the Christians would all be in outrage. So I don't think there's been like a concerted effort. Like, I don't see like anybody forming an organization to counter our efforts, mm-hmm. but definitely there's been. The media tends to lend credence to the pushback position, which is obviously the faith-based position.
We've observed that in Seattle as well.
I think my favorite moment of coverage of a similar thing always comes from our local Fox affiliate that spells atheist incorrectly. Mm. We are the most athe. Yeah. Switching around the E and the I.
We have the most athe that you can find.
Yes, we are the
in Washington
atheist.
State.
Yes. Mm.
So. The other organization that we mentioned is the Friends of Free Thought, and that's a very new organization.
It is.
So what was the impetus for starting that up?
So it really started because I mentioned the Free Thought Alliance conference, which has been supported by folks like Bruce Gleason, who started a few years ago, and it had continually run in the red year after year after year. Despite having excellent speakers, their costs are considerable. Booking the venue, booking the catering, booking the speaker, you know, all that stuff is considerable costs involved. And so I would say right around October, November of last year, we were kind of sitting and talking with the other skeptics about how this was going to go and how people were putting their personal funds into it and not, you know, they were basically investing it and not getting anything back. And
right.
so we started talking about, well, what if we started doing some fundraisers and just got together and did a fun event and see if we can get some support from the community. And so we were able to – we actually held two of them. The first one was a solstice party. And so we all got together and had a raffle and games and activities like that. And it was turned out to be pretty profitable. And then the second one was a wine social, which we called Think and Drink. And we're now planning the sequel. It's going to be called Think and Drink 2, Thinkier and Drinkier. And so we ended up making quite a bit of money fairly easily. I mean, obviously, there's some time and planning and logistics involved in getting that going. We invited everyone, including the community. Like, we posted on some wine websites because we wanted it to be open to everybody, not just skeptics and free thinkers. We wanted it to be also a place where people could come and socialize and maybe get to know an atheist a little bit and find out we're not so bad once you sit down and talk to us.
Yeah.
So we put together those two events. We ended up we were very, very grateful for the support from the community. We were able to present the Free Thought Alliance conference with a check for $1,600.
Oh, wow.
From the fundraising we did from those two events.
Wow.
And that became the seed to germinate the idea that we should stay as we should form an organization. And we have a few people, a lot of them are here tonight, Dave and Jan and Carolyn and Mike and Lisa, that helped with this burgeoning movement, and we started getting together and coordinating an effort to form a permanent organization. And we also, like, we supported Camp Quest. We did other things like that to help other secular causes. And the thing that we like about the structure that we're trying to put together is that something we've noticed or observed about other skeptical organizations is they tend to be organized around one personality. So you have one or two really dominant people, and they often do very, very good work, but they can somewhat, you know, they can alienate people because, you know, if it's one person and it's not a real structure, there's no organization behind it, if someone doesn't like that person, they just go away.
Right.
So our position with Friends of Free Thought is we want to exist as an independent body that's able to support organizations that need our help. So the Center for Inquiry, Camp Quest West, the Orange County Free Thought Alliance, there's a lot of areas where we can do some good and to raise funds and obviously promote and help those organizations. And also our second mission is to be of service in the community. So we want to start getting involved as skeptics and free thinkers of actually doing some good in the community. And
what do you have planned in that respect?
You know, we're talking about right now doing like a beach cleanup. That's probably going to be our first thing we're going to do.
Okay.
We're talking about like volunteering work, doing some soup kitchen stuff. We've been a bit on hiatus. It's obviously summer. Everybody's traveling and stuff.
Right.
But we're definitely planning to continue. We have a board of directors. We had an election. We're going to start working on our 501c3. I'm the vice president. I prefer the title president of vice. That's that's my official title.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
It's on my business cards. So, yeah, we're definitely trying to work towards having a real structure and act like a big organization, even though we're not there yet. And obviously, we want to continue to advocate for free thought causes and support the secular causes of our community. There's a lot of great things that are out there. Obviously, Camp Quest is a huge one. They need our support. They're doing great work. We want to be part of that.
Yeah, another situation when you have, you know, big personalities, and this is something that we're facing in Seattle right now, is organizations, community organizations, they have to serve the community. And when you've got a big personality sort of keeping the organization running and going up on the force of their own personality, those organizations don't tend to survive past that personality burning out.
Exactly.
Which invariably happens.
Exactly.
So addressing that right up ahead of time, I think, is a really good idea. Mm-hmm. I like the way you got that planned out.
I think we'll be taking some notes and some cues from that.
This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. When we come back, we're going to actually catch up on some news, and some very local news.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Secular humanism is a non-theistic view of the universe built on a foundation of reason, science, and democracy. Humanists support intellectual freedom and critical thinking, and we hold that human beings are autonomous centers of moral development. The Humanists of Washington is the oldest humanist organization in the state and offers a community of free thinkers who educate the public and celebrate life. For information on how you can be a part of the humanist activities in the Puget Sound area, become a member of the Humanists of Washington today. Visit humanistsofwashington.org.
Are you tired of being immersed in religious nonsense? You're certainly not alone. Everywhere we turn, it's thank God this and God bless that. It's high time for a pushback, and Reasonist Products is here to help. As the number one atheist t-shirt company in the world, Reasonist Products combines satire with style to draw positive attention to the atheism movement. Express your atheism. Come out with cotton. Visit ReasonistProducts.com today. Reasonist Products. Wear the cause.
Billy, I'm a certified ghost expert.
Wow, that's so credible.
Billy, your great-great-grandmother says she loves you and to give me your lunch money.
Aw, anything for family. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I know.
So you're on your Monday morning drive, and someone on Ask an Atheist says something that really, really gets your goat. You want to talk, you want to yell, you want to scream, and clicking the shiny red candy-like button just isn't good enough. Good! Call us! Leave us a message! Call Ask an Atheist at 206-420-0997 and vent your spleen now and for the future! That's 206-420-0997 and wait for the tone.
You can advertise on Ask an Atheist on the radio, on our website, and in our podcast. People just like you who have the same interests are listening right now, just like you are, and thousands will download this podcast and listen to it later. If you have a product, service, or idea to sell, people here in the Pacific Northwest and people around the world, thousands will hear your message. Let us help you sell your product, service, or idea. Contact us at advertising@askanatheist.tv. That's advertising@askanatheist.tv.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997.
I think they like the polka.
Yeah. That's never going to get old for me.
The polka variation.
Yeah, no, it's the polka that's never going to get old. Clearly, it's not the applause.
This is why Weird Al will not die.
Yeah, it was, we put the word out there that we would wanted more themes for the show, because we have the one song, and we were just sort of joking, and I suggested a polka, and somebody else suggested reggae, and Mike suggested a theremin, and what we got was polka, and then reggae with a theremin, so it worked out perfectly. Speaking of music, one thing I neglected to do, and I want to make sure we get this done, is if people want to join these organizations, where would I send them?
Well, the Backyard Skeptics has its own website, backyardskeptics.com and .org, I believe. There's also the Backyard Skeptics Meetup, which is easily found through meetup.com. And Friends of Free Thought, we do have our own website. We're big boys now, big boys and girls. It's friendsoffreethought.org. And you can also, if you'd please, like us on Facebook at facebook.com/friendsoffreethought.
Very good. So, speaking of music, one question that I ask musicians when we have them on the show, what is the interface between music and sort of free thought and humanism for you? Is there one?
Ooh. You know, I'm really inspired by a lot of very brilliant musicians, and many of them are not atheists. I mean, I think of like someone like Leonard Cohen. I think he's pretty much on the fence.
Yeah.
But he's certainly a believer in a higher power. And so I don't I read this really interesting thing that I think it was Dennett was talking about Bach, where he was saying that he doesn't ever want religion to disappear from the planet. He just wants us to move past it philosophically, but to always understand why Bach wrote what he wrote.
Yeah.
You know, Bach without context doesn't have the meaning to understand on the same level that Bach was appreciating, you know, obviously his God, he was venerating his deity. So for me, I became a musician, or I started becoming a musician when I was still a believer. And I certainly was involved in, I was an evangelical Christian for some time. And I would play praise music, you know, I played guitar for events with, you know, different folks, and everybody sings a song. And there's definitely a transcendent experience of being a musician and being on stage and connecting with an audience and everybody being on the same page with something.
Yeah.
So it's, I don't think it's intrinsically linked. I certainly, you know, when I perform, I pretty much I'm singing just for myself, and I hope other people like it. So it's always about a seeking and a yearning for me. It's always about an unrequited desire to sort of, you know, transcend this, you know, sort of corporeal experience and reach into the higher, you know, parts of my, you know, my mind, other things that I can tap into when I'm on stage and connecting with an audience. So I think that they're not necessarily intertwined for me, especially. I've definitely had very, very powerful spiritual, overwhelming, what I'll call as characterized as spiritual experience. Obviously, I know it's coming just from my mind that's giving me the experience. But certainly when I'm at an amazing concert, I have been broken down in tears many, many times. You know, I've been in front of, you know, especially most recently I was at the Monterey Music Festival and Paul McCartney headlined, you know what I mean? And there is just an indescribable feeling about being in a group of 90,000 people hearing Paul McCartney do Let It Be. And it's just like, I use the word sacred not in the metaphysical sense, but just in the feeling of sanctity, of connection with and oneness with other people. And I don't know that too many other things besides music really do that for you. So I definitely recognize that there are components of the human experience that are intangible, that are hard to really quantify, but that do tap into, you know, the more luminous aspects of our nature.
Carl Sagan, somebody who I think you have an appreciation for, given the artwork
Uncle Carl.
He used the word numinous to describe a sort of a spiritual feeling. And that's a word I'd very much like to reclaim for free thought, because that is a psychological phenomenon. And it could be a very positive and moving psychological phenomenon, as long as we recognize that the meaning of the universe is not coming through that door.
Right.
I think it's okay to feel that way.
Yeah.
And but just calling it spiritualism, I mean, what's the root of that? Or spiritual is spirit, so it, you know, it's ghosts and stuff like that. So we have to be careful, but not too careful, I think.
Yeah, I think that the experience of transcendence is something we can all identify with. And certainly when I was a believer, when I was in those moments with a group of people who are worshiping what I understood and they believed to be a loving God, that feeling overwhelmed me. Like, I felt that feeling of transcendence. It's something that's been programmed into our biology. It's a component of our physiology.
I can hear the emails being written 2 weeks from now. Right now.
See, that's a transcendent thing right there, because it's transcendent from my saying it to them writing the email.
That's true.
But certainly, I think we have to recognize as rationalists that there obviously is not a spiritual, supernatural spiritual component or metaphysical component. It's simply something the mind does, probably to make us want to stick around a little bit longer, because that's the whole reason we're here, to survive and procreate.
Fair enough. So we need to catch up on some news. We haven't talked about we haven't really spoken about the Catholic takeover of hospitals recently.
It's been something that's been going on in Washington State and is of great concern.
Yeah, Washington State is a very sensitive state for the Catholic takeover of hospitals, because there are a number of counties where the only hospitals available are owned by the Catholics. So what that means is there's nowhere in that county to go for reproductive stuff, for abortions, for certain types of elective surgery, for transgendered stuff. They're not really hospitals in the true sense of the word. They don't treat everyone, and it's not universal care. So this is This is something that means a lot to us in the atheism community. Interestingly enough, the California Attorney General may halt a hospital merger. The California Attorney General's office is investigating whether Orange County's Hogue Hospital is doing enough to ensure there are accessible alternatives for elective abortions after the hospital eliminated that service. Hogue announced in March that it would stop providing elective abortions due to low demand. However, a recent alliance between Hogue and St. Joseph Health, a Catholic organization, has the Attorney General investigating whether Hogue officials were accurate in its reporting of abortion procedures. Healthcare workers have expressed dismay and say they were assured no policies at Hogue would change under the new alliance. While Hogue is not bound by the U.S. Conference of Bishops' ethical and religious directives, eliminating abortions became a condition of the Hogue-St. Joseph Alliance. So this is right in your backyard, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I know that we have a very active chapter of the Americans United for the Separation of Church and State, and I'm on their email list, and I know they've organized several protests down there at Hogue. Yeah. Hogue is a massive, massive organization. It's a Presbyterian hospital. I'm not sure what their advocacy position is regarding the Presbyterian doctrine, but I know that the St. Joseph Health System is another massive medical organization in Orange County. It's obviously it's a Catholic organization, and it's of grave concern to folks. Obviously, it should be to all people, but especially to folks concerned about separation of church and state, Americans United, that they're moving in this direction, and then this merger might dictate the policy coming from, you know, whatever level of the bishopry, that they have to follow this directive. So,
and one of the things that I noticed when looking into this a little bit is that Hogue is not just a hospital. It is a complex. It is a health complex that has clinics, and you have physician groups and all sorts of things like that. So even if elective abortions are typically not provided in a hospital, this bars all of the physician groups, all of the clinics, anyone who's renting space from them from providing that service.
Yeah, it's alarming to think that in liberal California we could have an entire region wherein there might be no easy availability of that sort of care, and that's a real concern to a lot of us.
And it's based on a religious doctrine or a religious understanding,
right?
Yeah,
governing other people's health outcomes based on your own religious position just seems like it cannot possibly meet the standard of care for most physicians groups and healthcare groups. And I mean, I'd like to see that there's the physicians and healthcare workers that are protesting this and writing letters and. It's a tough situation.
We've gotten some very interesting emails on this subject, and I'd like to read one or two now. Our first one comes to us from Alan from the internet, and they write, "This morning I was listening to your podcast from July 7th, and what you said about Catholic hospitals taking over healthcare really hit home. I work for a Catholic healthcare system that also self-funds our insurance plan. The hospital will not perform tubal ligations, tube tying, vasectomies, or allow any of their physicians to prescribe any type of birth control or even mention it to patients. Also, with them funding our insurance, it will not cover these services for employees. There are crucifixes in every exam room, waiting room, and office, and we are expected to participate in prayer before every meeting. Most people's response to my complaints are, 'You chose to work there, just go work somewhere else.' I realize this argument does make sense, but there are not a great deal of options for employment in the area in which I live, so just quitting my job on principle would be detrimental to my family's financial well-being. I just get so completely disgusted at the role religion is playing in our healthcare. I realize it's my employer's choice not to provide these services, but to force their employees to adhere to their Catholic beliefs by not covering basic things like birth control seems ridiculous to me. I have had to spend a lot of money out of pocket on birth control because of this, and I know I am not alone as they employ thousands of people in the area. I'm curious to get your thoughts on the matter."
Terrifying.
That's the weird thing is, we've actually gotten a few of those emails now. We've said over and over again, they may be Catholic hospitals, but the doctors are not Catholic. The nurses are not Catholic. Mm-hmm. Almost overwhelmingly so. It's a little weird in that respect. And that's something that we have to talk about. But a lot, and every time we mention that, somebody says, well, why don't they just go work somewhere else? And as I said before, in Washington State, in many counties, if you want to work at a non-Catholic hospital, you're looking at a 4-hour commute every day, or you move.
We have a great number, the majority of hospitals in the I-5 corridor between Bothell and Tacoma are basically Catholic hospitals. And we've had emails from listeners that say, I thought that I was in the clear, and then I looked and I saw that my hospital, Highline, which doesn't sound like a Catholic hospital, just went through a merger or just had this alliance. And, you know, the big ones to look out for, St. Joseph's in California, you have Providence Health, you have Franciscan, And I think Peace Health is also religious, but they are not Catholic, and so they don't have the same kinds of restrictions to the same degree. But even so, anytime you have that religious affiliation, you look, you know, you look for those kinds of things, you know, within your standard of care. And Sam, you said, well, the doctors aren't Catholic, but the thing is that all of those healthcare workers, besides their restrictions on their own insurance, they are bound by those directives in Catholic hospitals, and they risk being reprimanded, or they risk losing their jobs, or they risk losing their privileges, or I'm going to switch you to night shift and, you know, put a letter in your file. Just like our listener, you know, tells us, there aren't too many options, and you need to look at what's, you know, not detrimental for your family.
Yeah, it's a real crisis when there's you know, such a monopoly on healthcare providers, especially in certain areas, and there's no real other options. I know, fortunately for Orange County, we still have a lot of hospitals that are owned by HCA, which is a huge, you know, global entity that doesn't ascribe to any sort of religious doctrine that I know of. But it's terrible, especially in the smaller areas, rural areas, where there's only one hospital option, you know, and that they are trying to get such a stranglehold on all reproductive procedures, not just abortion, but on any of those other procedures. It's terrifying, and it should be alarming to all people that that one small group could be able to dictate the policy for so many people. And it's, like you said, the providers themselves may not necessarily agree with that or ascribe to it, but they have no choice. I know this was one of the Obamacare compromises, was that, you know, that you could, insurance providers wouldn't necessarily have to provide coverage for birth control and things like that. And it's just really alarming that it's developing to this point.
There is a recent news piece about Catholic hospitals compromising on birth control. On Tuesday, they said it can accept the Obama administration's latest compromise on birth control coverage by religious employers. Catholic Health Association stated that their members will no longer have to pay for contraceptive coverage as originally required by the new U.S. healthcare law. U.S. Roman Catholic bishops are still suing to overturn the requirement, saying it trespasses on freedom of religion.
But what's really interesting is that the person who is in charge of this and saying, yes, we will actually provide this as part of your health care, as part of your insurance, as our employees, the person who did this was a nun. And she split from the bishop's conference to say, yes, for the people who are not Catholic, that are our employees, yes, we'll cover your birth control pills, we'll cover your vasectomy, just not at our facilities. Mm-hmm. There's still a little out clause there.
So we talk about reproductive health and abortion a lot. But and we think that's a very rarefied concept for healthcare. Healthcare is really way more than that. And that's absolutely true. However, in this case, their opinions on abortion and their opinions on birth control and their weird adoption of this idea leads to sort of a ripple effect throughout all of healthcare, as we can see in this email from Kate from Memphis. And she was listening to our episode, and she can't say that she's ever been genuinely concerned for my well-being while in a Catholic hospital. I'm switching case here so I can read this. But I did have a particularly funny incident this spring when I was taken into the emergency room after collapsing at work from vertigo. I had multiple tests that involved radiation, so I was repeatedly asked the preliminary question, are you currently pregnant or attempting to get pregnant? Between the repetition of the anti-anxiety medication they had given me, I decided that no was no longer an appropriate answer. As I was waiting for an MRI of my head, the tech asked again. Instead of saying no, I said, who gives a darn? If I am, there's no way I'm carrying to term. Do you guys take care of that kind of thing around here? Apparently, no one in the St. Francis Hospital thinks that's a funny thing to say, especially on Good Friday.
Ooh.
Oops.
So I hope Kate still got top-notch care for the thing that was ailing her. And
But,
you know,
that's the thing. She's not there for abortion. She's not there for reproductive health. She's there because she had vertigo and passed out. And are the questions they asking her about her health care? Of course, some of them are going to be, but obviously clear in their minds are not her as a patient, not her as a human being, but her as a potential
vessel
for some future human being.
Right.
And that was their primary awareness while she was trying to get treatment.
Now, to be fair, I do think that is a regular thing that, as part of standard practice, you do ask just to make sure that you're not doing anything that would then...
I think you're being too nice because you know too many medical people.
Okay,
here.
Okay, perhaps I am.
Honestly, I'll go through the email again. Every professional she dealt with asked her this question. They usually write that down, and she really was beginning to feel like, even under anti-anxiety medication, that no wasn't the proper answer. I don't think giving them credence here really is worthwhile.
Okay. All right.
I will say that I donate platelets once a month with the Red Cross.
Do they ask you if you're pregnant?
Every single time. I sit down to the computer. They leave the room because apparently it's a very secret thing that I have to give them these questions that I've answered every time I go in. And it's always, are you pregnant? Do you intend to get pregnant? There's lots of those kinds of questions every single month. You think that they have some record of that somewhere that they can know they'd stop asking me those questions?
Well, giving blood is I think, a bit more of an informal process than making sure you don't have cancer or a brain problem. I can kind of expect that giving blood, but when you're an admitted patient,
right,
and your medical history is usually 3 feet from you at any given time, I don't know. You know,
I don't think that any Catholic hospital will attend to Kent getting pregnant or attempting to get pregnant.
Probably not.
No.
That's one of the things they tend to stay away from.
It did work in that Danny DeVito movie, just so you know.
That's true. Oh, right. Less said about that, the better. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997. When we come back, we're going to take some questions from the audience and answer some emails. See you in a bit.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
Billy, I am a Nigerian prince, and I want to hide $1 bajillion in your locker.
Wow, $1 bajillion?
All I need is your lunch money.
What a great deal. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because you want to believe something doesn't mean you should. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled, week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
Doyle's Public House is Tacoma's number one spot for the best selection of import brews and Irish whiskey.
Football matches and Red Sox games, knowledge night and no cover live music.
Doyle's is your spot.
Check us out at doylespublichouse.com or stop by for a proper libation and soda bread at 2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma.
Like us on Facebook for all the latest updates and specials.
Doyle's in Tacoma.
2nd and St. Helens Avenue in Tacoma. doylespublichouse.com.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Out of the briny depths of the internet comes a comic book podcast so powerful it cannot be contained by a single continent. Mike and Paul save the universe.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Paul Rudd.
If you're an unsatisfied comics fan, we want to help you find better comics.
And if you've never picked up a comic before in your life, we want to help you find what could be your new favorite thing.
On Mike and Paul Save the Universe, we love the bejesus out of comics, and so should you.
Find us online at mikeandpaul.com.
If you enjoy the programming we create on Ask an Atheist, please make a contribution with us. Your sponsorship keeps our show in the air and improves the quality of our broadcasts. Don't make us beg. Please go to askanatheist.tv and contribute today.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 206-420-0997.
We're having some fun here in Southern California.
It never gets old. Oh, boy.
It's our legal marijuana.
Well, you know what the legal marijuana in Washington is, I think, at this point. That's pretty well known.
Yep. Washington and Colorado.
This is the time on Sprockets when we open it to some questions, comments, concerns. So do we have anybody with anything to say at this point? Okay, go for it.
Hi, I'm Dave. And over the course of the last year, after having gone a very long time without, I attended a couple of funerals. And during these funerals, both of which were religious in nature, one of the things that struck me that never occurred to me before was that because they were religious in nature, the passing of the person was placed in a religious context so that the survivors didn't think of them as simply being gone, that they were, there was some transcendent aspect of it, so that they were their life was a small part of something larger.
Yeah.
Right. And so it occurred to me that when it's my time, how, I mean, I thought that was very nice that that happened during the services. And when it's my time, I would like that also, but obviously not in a religious context. And so I've been thinking about this question about how do I achieve that in a non-religious context? And I'm wondering if you guys have any insights on that.
I actually heard someone say that if you're going to have someone speak at your funeral, have it be an atheist, because there's no one to more sort of potently talk about the meaning of the person who is no longer with us now and the things that we treasure and that we remember about them. I've also heard a lot of people recommend to use as sort of a meditation, a secular meditation, the piece that we are all stardust. And we were here as the atoms that were in the very beginning of the universe, and we're here now. So that can be a very sort of comforting thing here. And apart from making your mark on individuals, you know, whatever you do to make your mark that perpetuates, whether it's publications, whether it's teaching someone a song, whether it's writing a song, whether it's you know, having a house that you have been able to will to your descendants. Those are all sorts of ways that I would think that that atheists and secular humanists would, you know, things that they would do to approach death in a very different way from a religious person.
I don't have a good answer for that one, because...
Is it anything you've ever thought of?
For other people, yeah. You know, my family is very... We tell stories mm-hmm. when somebody passes. We talk about the weird things they did, the good things they did, maybe a couple seconds about the things that annoyed us. When my grandmother passed, there were no services. She didn't want services. But there had to be something. There had to be some sort of closure for the family. And that's the thing is, for me, the funeral isn't about me. It's for everybody else. And so we had a picnic. Me and my family went to one of her favorite places to go, and we ordered drinks and ordered one for her and just talked about her for a while. And I don't really want one, you know? I maybe it's just vanity, but I want everybody to think I just stepped out for a beer or something. Yeah, I don't really have a good answer for that one.
Yeah, but... Okay. Well, I just don't know why people don't get that dead is dead. You know, I mean, I lost my husband, you know, and it was, don't like it, lonely, you know, miss him. We had a really great party, you know, we called it our last party, but it's just like, it's over.
Yeah.
That's how it is.
People don't get that dead is dead, because dead is sad, and dead is hard, and dead is, makes no sense, and dead is...
Well, I don't like it, that's what it is, and I just don't, I don't understand... I would prefer another alternative, but I agree with you that you sort of have a celebration of their what they left behind, you know
yeah.
what I mean? But then after that, it's just like, I don't think we're going to meet up in heaven. God knows which husband I'd meet up with, but, you know.
Hopefully the one you like.
Well, he was the only one I liked after four, but, you know. But the point, is, I don't think it's going to happen. I think it's over. I mean, it was, you know, we both agreed that we wanted to be cremated, tossed in the ocean, whatever, and you know, it's over. And I just don't understand why people don't get that. I mean, and they even like to use euphemism, passed away, gone, better place.
I find myself using passed away, and then I think about what the derivation of that means, and I'm like, that's not what I mean.
I mean, dead. I mean, I used, yeah. And actually, I'll tell you, it really works with telemarketers. You call, they say, well, can I talk to Frank? And I say, no, he's dead. And they kind of don't have anything to say. But anyways, I just think it's like, yes, I think you should celebrate the person. I think that what they did in their life is significant, but it's over.
Right.
And I just don't know why people... I don't like it. I would like it another way.
I think some people... I think I have trouble sort of getting that concept sometimes. And I think talking around it and maybe what a funeral would be, funeral services would be sort of talking about the hole that's left in your world now that that person is gone. And they are gone.
Yeah.
That's
pretty much
final.
Yeah.
You know, and I, anyways, but it just, like I say, I just don't know why people want euphemisms, and like I say, I...
My family communicates entirely through euphemism. We don't communicate any other way, and not having one for somebody dying has, well, they died, and then we all look sheepishly at each other for 10 minutes. So
anyway, just my thoughts.
Well, in a sense, I mean, passed away does make some sense because we are. It is a transition. It's a conversion, obviously. My atomic makeup, my carbon, my you know, the heavy elements of my that are contained in my in this body are going to be redistributed throughout the you know the local area and become other things. So there is a definitely a place for that. But I agree with you. It's really hard to think about what I want. I think I like the storytelling aspects that I see. Yeah. Obviously. You know, I come from a believing family, and when we have a you know memorial or funeral for anyone in my family, it's got a religious context. And inviting people to come up and tell stories, I think, is the most fun about that. And I certainly hope that when I go, that there's a huge party, and that people tell stories and they're honest and not just you know telling the good stuff. Because you know, I have things too that I need to work on. You know, like I hope that people are really honest about their experience of knowing me and what it was like to have me in their life and, you know, the good and the bad and the ugly. I really want it to be an honest experience. And I think we all have a problem with the finality of death. And I love I think it's the P.Z. Myers quote, maybe it's the wrong attribution, when he says, you know, as atheists, all that we have to look forward to is the heat death of the universe, you know? And it's true, you know? I mean, and of course, then the universe is probably going to become something else, but I'm not going to be here to see it. Maybe some of my carbon will still be around. We'll see.
Right.
So it's a difficult final thing, but I think that the fairy tale aspect of it, that of the reassurance of you know the believing person who believes that death is just a major change of address, you know, can't get your mail forwarded there. You know, that to me that's a position of denial rather than embracing the idea that the person is gone completely. They still live in our memory, certainly they still exist. I'm a huge fan of Douglas Hofstadter, and he talks about the recursive loop and the consciousness loop and how our kind of my mind software is running on everybody else's hardware a little bit.
So, I was going to say, but Kent will solve it with software
exactly.
and technology.
I will solve it. Well, the mind is software running on the computer that is the brain, right. And certainly when the brain shuts down, the mind will also. But that's you know, but I think that hopefully my software continues to run on a few other brains, and that they my sense of humor maybe sparks in every now and then. They remember something funny, like in a context where something else comes up. They think, oh, this is what Kent would have said in this situation, and that'll be my afterlife, and that'll be the best afterlife I could hope for, to be remembered well.
Let's go to the next question.
My name is Evan, and my question is somewhere on the similar line of funerals, and rather my concern. Maybe it's irrational. Because I'm dead, but that
starting
my funeral,
a very death show.
Yeah. My funeral, because I've seen it happen before, where it's a non-religious person's funeral, and it gets religiously hijacked.
Yeah,
and that's something for me that's a bit of concern, and because there's people that have very religious family members that are not religious at all, and when you're dead, it's hard to stand up for yourself.
You've just hit the reason why I don't want a service. Go to a bar or something. Because I'm dead, I'm gone, you know, I'm not coming back, but it would be, I don't even know how to talk in this sort of sense, but I don't want the last thing that's done in my honor to be about something I hated, basically.
I actually think I have a very different opinion on that, and I really don't care if six different groups want to have six different funerals and one of them wants to be... If someone is a fundamentalist Mormon and wants to convert me after the fact, I don't care because I'm dead. I'm not there to care anymore. And
you're
if
Jewish. That's already been done.
Yes, that is true. but it's, you know, something that I learned when I had older family members pass away is that a funeral isn't... you know, necessarily for the person, is for the community who is every member of the community that is awakened to that moment where they are reminded of their own losses in all sorts of ways. And you have a comforting, you know, ceremony, some kind of comforting ritual to reassure the community that you as an individual are valued. And so mm-hmm. I don't really care if everyone wants to have, say, Kaddish for 8 months, or if you want to convert me after the fact, or you want to cremate me. It'll be a little bit difficult if someone wants to cremate me and someone wants to bury me in a pine box, but we'll do a little Solomon thing there and split me down the middle.
Since I might be the guy in that case. I'm going to disagree with you vehemently in a moment, but I'd like to get Ken's take
Sam
on
gets
it.
To do whatever he wants to do.
All right.
Well, I'm just thinking about death because it's kind of come up as a topic, and, you know, I'm really grateful that life ends. You know, I'm glad that I'm not going to live forever. I can't imagine a worse thing. You know, my life has value because I know that it's going to end. Certainly, I love being alive. I love the experience of being a human being and learning and knowing and growing and serving and loving and all the great things that come with it. But I am glad the story that there's a chapter in the book, and then there's the last page, and you close it. You know, that is going to be, that's going to be my book, and I can't imagine a worse fate than living forever. It's not, it's the last thing that I would want.
I'm afraid I'm going to miss something. Really, I don't know that I want to live forever, but I'm always afraid I'm going to miss something. I don't know. I'm afraid I'm going to miss something when I go to sleep. I mean, maybe my problem isn't about death. Maybe my problem is something a little bit deeper. But the thing is about a funeral is that it's yeah, it's for the other people, but it's for the other people and their memory of you. And so, and it's not just they're privately going to pray for you, they're privately going to say the Kaddish. What he's talking about, and I've seen this happen, I'm sure you've seen this happen, is that somebody who's not a particularly strong believer, but their family is, so they invite the pastor of the church over, and he does his bit, and then he turns it into a conversion ceremony. Mm-hmm. Would you really be comfortable with that?
And I think at some point, if the participants in that particular memorial event, their own moment of sorrow is being hijacked by someone else to push a religious agenda, then that's a no-no. That's a bad feeling all around. And we've had listeners email us with that. We've had speakers talk about that. There have been, you know, all kinds of columns and books written on that as well. And that's a tough moment. And when I say I don't really care what you do when I'm dead, it's from the perspective of I want you to do what is right for you to help with that that grief.
I think I would be fine with it if they acknowledged my own belief system. So in other words, if someone that loved me intimately and is a believer, if they got up to the podium or wherever it is, it's at a Chili's, you know, they're going to go, you know, they stand up at the bar and order another Mai Tai and say, you know, this is what Kent believed. And, you know, we're honoring him, we're honoring his belief system, but this is what I believe and here's why. You know, I'd be fine with that as long as they acknowledge and honor that you know, if it is really about me and the fact that I'm gone, that they acknowledge and honor my own beliefs and why I believe them and validate that and say, you know, I disagreed with him about this, but this was his belief system. He arrived at it through a painstaking process of analysis and reanalysis and self-examination. I disagreed with his belief system. This is why I believe what I believe, but I honor it, and we're here to honor him and not us.
I like that, too. So we'll take probably one more question.
Okay. My name is Mike. Thank you, Mike, for coming.
No problem.
So the topic has been funerals and allowing the religious amongst us to sort of have their version of a ceremony for perhaps an atheist who's passed away. How about we flip it for a moment and think, what right do we have as atheists to speak out at a religious funeral and be free to speak our minds and speak of the person no longer being there? We're not going to say they're in a better place because we don't believe that. What rights, quote unquote rights, do we have as non-believers at a funeral to speak out amongst a field of religious people?
We were involved in a funeral in a support capacity for an individual who had a family member pass away.
Yeah.
And the family member was highly religious, and the memorial service was highly religious. And, you know, he spoke at this family member's funeral and did not talk about his non-theistic perspective, but talked about his father and mm-hmm. let other people participate in the religious memorial and in the veterans salute.
You know, I think that the great story is when the pastor says, well, you know, to the atheist son, well, you know that your father's in a better place. And he says, well, sure, if he likes darkness and worms. You know, obviously that's not appropriate at a funeral.
No.
I was just recently involved in a memorial for a gentleman who was, you know, a sort of a mentor. And, you know, he was not religious, but he was certainly spiritual. And a lot of people came up and said some lovely, lovely woo-woo things about the universe and time and continuums. And Deepak Chopra would have, you know, had a great time with this thing.
Stuff of a good Doctor Who plot,
right,
but not necessarily real life.
Yeah, exactly. And I've been asked to perform and to do a song, you know, for the memorial. And I picked a song by a band called Over the Rhine called All My Favorite People Are Broken. And it was like the most appropriate song that I could think of because it acknowledges the duality of our nature. The fact that, you know, that there is an essential yearning in all of us to become a better person. And people got up and said what they said. I got up and said what I said. I did my little song. I didn't, you know, endorse any of the woo-woo ideas. I talked about his influence in my life and the place part that he played in my life. And that to me was the ruling guide. It was like, I'm not going to certainly endorse it. I'll acknowledge and respect what he believed, but I'm here to talk about his place in my life and why it was valuable.
In many ways, it's the last thing that's done specifically in their honor. So if they have a particular ceremony, I'm going to go with that. I'm not going to be the guy who goes up and says they're in a better place now, unless it's like Kurt Vonnegut and I'm making a joke. But I will definitely not be quiet about how I feel about my friends and where I'm at with it privately. With the people who are there, maybe even at the same event, but not on stage. I'm not going to use that as my platform to tell people why it's dumb. That's what I'm doing right now, so I'm well covered in that respect, I suppose. It's a weird thing. For me, it's part of being an atheist means that the show ending, whatever, just it's over, you're gone. You're dead. There's nothing after that. Suppose if you're going to turn it into a religious conversion ceremony, just don't tell me. Before I die, and I won't know, and then I'll be dead, and then it doesn't matter.
Okay, I'll make sure that happens.
Okay. Pick a really funny religion.
Zoroastrianism.
Well, no, they don't convert.
Oh, they don't. You're right.
Yeah.
There's no advocacy.
One yet to be invented.
Since we're pre-recorded this week, there is no post-show, and I'd say we are going to go to a post-show, but post-show happens to be right here. You can give us a call at 206-420-0997, or you can leave us an email at getquestions@askanatheist.tv, or you can go to our website at askanatheist.tv, and click on the shiny, candy red button. See you guys next week. Thank you guys very much. It's been
Thank
a lot
you
of fun.
So much. Thank you.
Thank you.